There is an average of one mass shooting per day in the United States of America. In his new book, Repeal the Second Amendment, historian Alan Lichtman has written the first book that uses history, legal theory, and up-to-the-minute data to make a case for the amendment's repeal in order to create a clear road to sensible gun control in the United States. Repeal the Second Amendment explores both the true history and current interpretation of the Second Amendment to expose what Lichtman calls the NRA's blatant historical manipulations and irresponsible fake news releases. He also looks at the history of firearms and gun regulations from colonial times to the present to explain how a historically forgotten sentence in the Constitution has become a flashpoint of recent politics that benefits only the gun industry, their lobbyists, and the politicians on their payroll. Again, the name of the new book is Repeal the Second Amendment, The Case for a Safer America. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Alan Lichtman back to the roundtable. Alan, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
So what brought you to this particular subject and wanting to make this case for a safer America?
I was inspired by two things. First, I was inspired by an op-ed in 2018 by the late, great Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, in which he said the game needs to be changed for gun control advocates, that we need to be forthright about repealing the Second Amendment, which has become the shield for the gun lobby. The other thing was my own experience growing up in a tough part of Brooklyn in the 1950s. We had plenty of fights, plenty of conflict, but no one that I knew was ever seriously hurt or killed. And the reason was we didn't have guns. If we had guns, there's no question that the hotheads among us would have shot each other and seriously injured or killed someone. But I got to tell you something. This was a book that a lot of my friends and family did not want me to write. One point, of course, was that they worried about my personal safety. Another, more poignant reason was that they were afraid this would play into the hands of the gun lobby, you know, which has been screaming that gun control advocates want to take away Second Amendment rights. But the point is that the gun control advocates have been at a dead end for a quarter of a century. Their strategy of "we support the Second Amendment, but" inspires no one and hasn't worked. As Justice Stevens said, we need a new approach.
So let's just focus on the fact of what you just mentioned, that bringing up this issue, discussing this issue, writing a book about this issue can have you and others around you concerned about your safety. What does that say about the issue as a whole and how it has transformed over the decades?
Yes. Let me tell you this. America lived comfortably for over 200 years with the Second Amendment that was only interpreted by courts and policymakers as protecting collective defense through a well-regulated militia. In 1955, a paper was written which said that all of the court decisions and interpretations indicate that the Second Amendment does not provide an unlimited right for private persons to keep and bear arms. That was not written by some gun control organization back then. It was written by the constitutional expert for the National Rifle Association. But then something changed. In 1977, the National Rifle Association was taken over by a group of militants. This was called the Revolt in Cincinnati because it took place at the annual meeting in Cincinnati. They then hijacked the Second Amendment, distorted its meaning to provide an unlimited right to keep and bear private arms to anyone. They don't care who gets the arms, drug dealers, gangbangers, people prone to suicide, criminals, domestic abusers. In fact, last year, the National Rifle Association furiously lobbied against renewal of the Violence Against Women Act because it would take guns away from domestic abusers who kill many hundreds of women each year. And this has now become kind of a fanaticism on the part of the gun lobby and those who are convinced by their propaganda. And when you have fanaticism, you have danger. We've already gotten death threats through emails. I gave a talk the other day in Virginia, and they had six policemen standing by. We didn't have any violence, luckily, but we had a wonderful, spirited discussion with advocates on both sides. And that's what I'm hoping my book will stimulate: a new approach, a new discussion, a reasoned analysis. That may be a vain hope, but so far it's worked out.
So I don't have to tell you, Professor, obviously it is an election year. So this gives us an opportunity, doesn't it, to put this issue front and center. And I'm curious of where you see that now in the candidates who have emerged and are emerging, where that falls with your optimism on making real change.
I think this is the time. In the 2018 midterms, for the first time, we saw the gun control movement outspending and out-advertising the gun lobby. That's never happened before. 70 to 80% of the American people support reasonable gun controls. And that's what I'm aiming at in this book, not the confiscation of guns. No one confiscated guns during the 200-plus years when the Second Amendment only protected collective self-defense. And we've seen, you know, mass shootings have become so commonplace that we barely notice them anymore. There's one mass shooting a day in America on average. And Donald Trump, you know, promised after every mass shooting that he would really do something about it. But every time he caved in to the National Rifle Association, and you saw he made no gesture to those involved in gun control in the State of the Union, just talked about the Second Amendment. And you saw the protest by a parent of someone, a child who was killed at the Parkland Marjorie Douglas Stoneman mass shooting a few years ago. So I think the time is right for this game-changing approach to gun control. And all of the Democrats are favoring gun control. It's a rising issue. It was kind of a non-issue for many years among Democrats. It's now one of the top five issues for Democrats, and every Democratic candidate is a staunch supporter of gun control. And a lot of the money that's coming into the gun control movement is coming in from Michael Bloomberg, who is now a declared Democratic candidate. So I think this issue will be very, very stark, among others, in the 2020 campaign.
Does it also come at a good time? Because from what we read and what we understand in the press, is that the National Rifle Association is having severe internal problems as well.
That's correct. The National Rifle Association, let me tell you, was actually born in 1871. And it wasn't to support the Second Amendment or stop gun control. And there was plenty of gun control in the 19th century across America, including in the South, you know, a very conservative part of the country. It was only much later, in the 1930s, that it began to switch to opposing gun control, and it was only in the late 20th century that it turned to shielding its movement under the Second Amendment. Today, it's in disarray. It's become a racket. You know what it does? It takes in a lot of money from true blue believers, and I have respect for them, and it uses it to pay exorbitant salaries to its leaders. $1.4 million to its CEO, Wayne LaPierre, $1.2 million to its number two, many others getting north, well north of $500,000, and none of it trickling down to the rank and file employees of the NRA. There's been a lot of internal dissension and a lot of protest about the ways in which the leadership is simply looting the treasury of the National Rifle Association. And there's a lot of consternation, too, that the National Rifle Association has become bought for by the gun manufacturers who pour a lot of money into the NRA.
Professor Alan Lichtman is our guest. The name of the new book is Repeal the Second Amendment, The Case for a Safer America. You call in this book, as the title suggests, to repeal and replace the Second Amendment. So let us talk about how you repeal it and ultimately what do you replace it with?
Yes. First of all, you repeal it with the facts. And one of the reasons I wrote this book was to give people the facts about the Second Amendment and the facts about gun violence. Start with gun violence. Last August, a gunman armed with a semi-automatic rifle in Dayton, Ohio, opened fire at a crowd near a bar. In 36 seconds, I'm not exaggerating, 36 seconds, he killed 9 persons and wounded 17 others. That is 3 times the number of persons murdered by guns in an entire year in the country of Japan, which is a big country with almost a third of the population of the United States. In a flicker of time, 3 times the numbers killed an entire year in Japan, which has some of the world's tightest gun controls. And Japan is not an outlier, although it's a little extreme. If you compare the United States to our closest peer nations, the G7 group of nations, plus Australia, an American per capita, per person, is 20 times more likely to be murdered by a gun than residents of our peer nations. That's not 20%. That's 20 times. You know, mass killings are but a fraction of the 15,000 persons murdered by a gun on average each year in the U.S. And that's not the limit of gun violence. There are more gun suicides, over 23,000 approximately a year. As compared to our peer nations, an American is 7 times more likely to commit suicide by a gun, whereas an American, and this is per capita, is 40% less likely to commit suicide by other means. And in terms of the Second Amendment, not a single framer of the amendment or anyone involved in its passage or ratification ever said that it was designed to provide a right of private persons to keep and bear arms. And here is the most decisive argument. It's not a pretty one, but who framed the Second Amendment? James Madison, a Virginia slaveholder. About half the states were slave states. Do you think for a moment they would have framed and passed an amendment that gave free black people in America a right to keep and bear private arms? Of course not. But by tying it to the militia, they kept arms out of the hands of non-whites because non-whites were barred from the militia. Every single federal court case until the 21st century upheld the Second Amendment as providing only a collective right to a well-regulated militia until 2010, when a conservative Supreme Court adopted the NRA view of the Second Amendment. Not a single federal court had ever struck down a gun control measure under the Second Amendment.
So the second part of the question being then, what do you replace it with?
Yes. Once you repeal the Second Amendment, you put us in line with every other country in the world. There's only one other country that has a Second Amendment, Guatemala, hardly a model of gun safety. So once you repeal the Second Amendment, or even when you create momentum for repeal, that opens the door, again, not for the confiscation of guns. I'm not advocating that. That never happened. But for the gun control measures that the vast majority of Americans support. Among them that would make us so much safer, permit laws like they have in places like New York State, universal background checks, bans on semi-automatic weapons, which are weapons of war, which no one needs for self-defense, hunting, or sports, ban on high-capacity magazines. You know, we have magazines now that have a capacity to have rounds of 20, 30, 50, even in some cases, 100 bullets. Gun safety laws, which are very important to keep to control gun accidents, which harm our children. Red flag laws to take guns out of the hands of the most dangerous of persons, and laws designed to control what is perhaps the most dangerous tendency towards gun violence, ghost guns produced by 3D printers, which are now totally unregulated, or guns produced at home by legally buying for people who can't otherwise get guns, parts of guns that they can put together. These are all reasonable measures that would make us so much safer if we even approached the gun death rates of our peer nations. We would save tens of thousands of lives each year in this country.
And you touched on this, but I think it's important to note as we wrap up our conversation that all signs lead to the majority of Americans want this.
Yes, but they don't have the facts. They don't have the information. There's too much mythology and alternative facts out there. And I wrote Repeal the Second Amendment, the Case for a Safer America, to give gun control advocates a new and winning strategy instead of playing not to lose, which hasn't worked for 25 years, and to give them the facts and information that they need to realize that repealing the Second Amendment harms no one and makes us a vastly safer nation.
The last time you were on our program, you were talking about your book, The Case for Impeachment. That book came out about 3 years ago. Well, what happened?
Well, my prediction that Donald Trump would be impeached came to pass, and the charges against Donald Trump were the gravest ever leveled against an American president, including Richard Nixon, who did not involve foreign powers in our democracy. This was an attempt to get a foreign nation to rig an election at the sacrifice of our national security. Even many Republicans said the House managers made their case, but they'd become such enablers of Donald Trump that they weren't willing to take the next necessary step and vote for conviction. And many of them said, oh, Donald Trump will be chastened, right? He'll be a new man. Quite the opposite. Instead of being chastened, he is now emboldened, seeking revenge on anyone who he thinks is a critic, including those brave persons like Lieutenant Colonel Vindman and EU Ambassador Gordon Sondland, who testified and told the truth, are now subject to revenge by Donald Trump. And felons like Roger Stone, who are friends and allies of Donald Trump, are being subject to Donald Trump's attempt to help them not pay for their crimes.
What is interesting is that your book even came before the quote-unquote perfect phone call with Ukraine. So there is obviously a pattern of behavior, and I just wonder, so where does that leave us, do you think, with this notion of impeachment as a tool of removing a president from office?
Yes, the defenders of Donald Trump in the Senate have set an incredibly dangerous precedent, which, if followed, would totally destroy our constitutional order and turn the president into an autocrat. Their constitutional expert, Alan Dershowitz, says, as long as the president doesn't break a statutory law, he can do whatever he wants to rig an election in his favor, so long as he believes his election is in the national interest. And, of course, every president believes that. That means a president could use his legal powers for declassification to share our nuclear secrets with the Russians and the Chinese in return for their intervening in the election on his behalf. It means that he could use his power over justice, and we've seen he's totally politicized the Justice Department, to get them to investigate all of his political opponents or even journalists or people like me that he doesn't like. This has given a bright green light for the Russians to intervene again on Trump's behalf in the next election, and Trump will again welcome it and exploit it. Nothing could be more dangerous. This is a pivotal moment for the survival of our constitutional democracy. Remember what Benjamin Franklin said, a republic, if you can keep it, well, our republic is in peril.
Those of us, and there are many of us who obviously share and are knee-deep in that concern of our democracy. What, during the discussion around impeachment, it was often said that, as you said a moment ago, that it sets a dangerous bar. And of course, the concern also is that you've also set a bar that any time you have a split House and Senate, that you can have a situation where whatever someone does, they can be impeached.
Yeah, if this wasn't impeachable, it's hard to imagine what would be. And, you know, it's a different time. During the Watergate scandal, a third of Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee voted articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon. It was members of his own party that forced Richard Nixon to resign when they told him he would be impeached and likely convicted. Now Republicans have simply become the enablers of Donald Trump. Doesn't matter what he does. And here's why. Donald Trump has trashed everything that Republicans have professed to stand for. Personal morality, personal responsibility, gone. States' rights, limited government, fiscal responsibility, gone. Respect for traditional institutions, gone. So the Republican Party has nothing left but Donald Trump. And that's the danger. When a party becomes a cult of personality, there is no longer any check on an autocratic type of president like Donald Trump, who still thinks he's the CEO of the Trump Organization, not a president pledged to uphold our Constitution.
Alan Lichtman is Distinguished Professor of History at American University. The book we were just talking about is The Case for Impeachment, but the new book is Repeal the Second Amendment, The Case for a Safer America. The book is published by St. Martin's Press. Professor, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Same. Great conversation. Take care.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Repeal the Second Amendment, The Case for a Safer America. Professor Alan Lichtman is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.